Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Mick Clifford podcast with the Irish Examiner. Now, earlier this week, there was an exhumation of the body of Baby John, the baby who was found on the White Strand near Carrisavie in County Kerry on the 14th of April 1984. The baby had been stabbed 28 times. That discovery led to what came to be known as the Kerry Babies Tribunal, which many saw as a seminal and shocking event in the Ireland of the time. The central figure in the tribunal was Joanna Hayes, a then 25-year-old woman from Abbey Dorney in North Kerry, which is about 70 kilometres from the White Strand where the baby was found. And I'm just pointing that out because some people, even today, describe Joanna Hayes as a local woman in relation to where the baby was found, and that is not the case at all. She was from a different peninsula 70 kilometres away. In any event, there was no connection between Baby John and Miss Hayes, and she and her family were done a grievous wrong by different arms of the state. Last year, a High Court judge said that the findings of the tribunal against Miss Hayes and her family were unfounded and incorrect. The family are believed to have received a settlement in excess of €2 million from the state. The latest development in that story was this week's exhumation, which is part of an investigation begun 3 years ago to find out who was Baby John's mother. It should be pointed out here that the original investigation into Baby John's death effectively ended within weeks of the discovery of the body when Gardaí erroneously connected the baby to Miss Hayes. Now, unfortunately, that's been a feature of some Gardaí investigations down through the decades. They hone in on somebody who turns out not to have been involved, and the problem there is all other avenues of inquiry shut down. And it would seem that that was definitely the case here. And once, as they say, a trail goes cold, it becomes very difficult to pick it up again. But that's what the Gardaí are now trying to do 34 years after the initial discovery. This new investigation wants to locate the mother of the baby and determine whether she had anything to do with his killing. The Gardaí have made it plain that they will treat anybody who comes forward with the utmost compassion. They're working to the theory that the mother was from the area of South Kerry where the baby was found. They placed a particular emphasis on Valentia Island because of the tides that may have washed the baby up onto the White Strand. But over the last 3 years, they've taken a number of DNA samples in the wider area, and it's believed that they are hoping for at least a family match with the baby. This is apparently the reason why there was the exhumation. They want some fresh DNA samples and see if they match, perhaps even with a family member of the mother, and therefore they may be able to trace whom the mother is. The identity of the person who killed Baby John is just one of a number of questions that still remain 37 years on from that tragic finding in a plastic bag wedged between rocks on the White Strand. One of the reporters who covered the whole affair from the very outset was the Irish Examiner's Donal Hickey, and Donal joins me now. Donal, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Mick.
Donal, for yourself and even myself, particularly as I'm originally from the area where Baby John was found, this is a familiar story, but many people may be coming to it for the first time. As I said, it began with that discovery in April 1984. How did you first hear about it?
Well, I remember very well. I was sitting at home on a Sunday morning reading my Sunday paper. Now Sunday is normally a quiet news day. You don't expect much to happen. And the phone rang. And on the line was a very good contact from the Carrisavie area who told me that a baby's body had been found on the White Strand, which is a few miles outside the town, and that the body was badly injured with several stab wounds. So I followed it up from there and I got confirmation from the guards and all that. And I prepared my story for the following morning's Irish Examiner. And that really was the start of the Kerry Babies saga. Because, as you'd expect, major garden investigation immediately got underway, focused, as you said, very much on the Carrigaline, South Kerry area initially. And when 2 weeks later it emerged that a woman in North Kerry called Joanne Hayes had been pregnant and was no longer pregnant, had given birth to a baby, obviously, and the Garda investigation immediately switched to North Kerry. They took their eye off the ball in the Carrigaline, Iveragh area, and they seemed to make assumptions that this woman, Joanne Hayes, was the mother of the Carrigaline baby. And of course, that was proved to be entirely false, as we know by now. And it led to a very, very long story, which isn't yet finished in any way, because no one has ever been found, never mind prosecuted, in relation to the killing of the Carrigaline baby, as is known.
Yes, baby John, as was christened, I think, by the undertaker, Tom Cornan, at the time when they gave the baby a burial and all, and he's buried in I think it's the Holy Cross Cemetery in Carrigaline. But taking up that story from there, Donal, 2 weeks later, as you say, somebody identified Joanna Hayes. She had been pregnant. Then she was arrested along with her family. She lived with her adult siblings and her mother on a relatively small farm outside Abbeydorney. They were brought in for questioning. They were questioned by members of what was known as, I think, the murder squad at the time, who'd been in a number of controversies. It should be pointed out, no charges or no findings were ever made against any members of that squad. But nevertheless, they brought in the family. The family were questioned. And what came out of that detention?
Well, what came out of that detention was basically the family and Joanne herself made statements. Joanne made a statement to the effect that she had stabbed the baby and murdered the baby on the farm in Abbeydorney. Family members were charged with concealment of the killing of the baby. Now, these charges were based on statements which were made by the Hayeses while in Garda custody. And there were some really outlandish kind of statements. One was that the baby's body was dumped into the sea at Slay Head and washed up then in Carrigaline.
There was a suggestion, Don, was there, that or they signed a statement to the effect that they drove out from their home to Slay Head.
That is correct, yes. Now, what the guards didn't do was they didn't act on something that Joanne Hayes herself told them. She told them that her baby was on the family land in Abbeydorney, but they didn't go to search until she was charged with murder. On the evening that she was charged, after she being charged, and she was now in Limerick prison, her siblings went out to the farm again and they searched, acting on her instructions. And yes, they found a baby's body in a plastic bag in a pool of water on the land.
So now we had two babies.
Now we have two babies, and now we have a major turn in the investigation. Because the first question you're going to ask is, how come the Hayeses made all these statements incriminating themselves in a murder which they couldn't have committed? And further tests were carried out. Blood tests showed that Jeremiah Locke, who had been in a relationship with Joanne Hayes and who had fathered her daughter, Yvonne, who was living with her, could not have been the father of the Carrigaline baby. And then there was an even more ridiculous theory that Joanne Hayes had twins, but there were two different fathers involved.
Yeah, and just to back it up a tiny bit there, Donald. So we have a scenario when the family are in custody. They make these statements. The statements all fit into a story whereby Joanne gave birth. She stabbed the baby a number of times. Her family colluded to cover it up by her brother, at least one of her brothers, drove a car out to Slay Head, which is on the opposite peninsula from the White Strand where the baby was found, and threw the baby's body into the sea there, which certainly in theory could mean that the tides would have brought the baby's body over onto the Iveragh Peninsula, and that's where the baby was found. And as you say, as a result of that, Joanna was charged with murder. At the beginning of that detention, she initially said, yes, I had a baby. I had a baby outside the house at home. The baby didn't survive. And she said where the baby was. But that wasn't accepted. So it was only, as you say, after their custody finished, their time in custody finished, that she was able to send someone out to prove that the original story she gave was entirely true, that unfortunately her baby did not survive, but there was absolutely no suggestion that she had killed the baby. And as you say, there was a big problem then, because now you had two babies, and the baby, the original one, whose murder the Gardaí charged Joanna Hayes with, could not have been the man whom Joanne was having a relationship with. So that was a big problem they had then, because immediately what arises there is, how could they have made those statements in custody, very detailed, admitting to a murder and aiding and abetting in the disposal of a body? How could they have done that when there was absolutely no connection between Joanna and this baby in Carsevine?
And that was the crux, and that was what led to the Kerry Babies Tribunal. And the Kerry Babies Tribunal was really an investigation into how Joanne Hayes and members of her family came to be charged with offences they could not have committed.
And that's key, Donal, isn't it? Because, and I think Joanna Hayes herself said a number of times after, it should never have been called the Kerry Babies Tribunal. It should have been called the Kerry Garda Tribunal. Because at the outset, it was an investigation, as you say, into finding out how they could have made these statements in custody. And just to say, prior to that, once this sort of became known, the state solicitor in Kerry looked at this scenario. And he said, we can't go ahead charging this woman with murder. That's just out. So the murder charge was withdrawn. There was a tip-off about that to journalists at the Sunday Independent. They reported that, and that set the whole thing off into a different sphere that ultimately ended with the tribunal.
It led to the tribunal, and the tribunal really was into the Garda's handling of the whole investigation. And that's what it was all about. Unfortunately, it became a sort of an inquisition into the private life of Joanne Hayes. And I think that's what really angered the public, and especially feminists and women's rights organisations. And they really got in behind Joanne Hayes. There were several protests outside the hearing in Tralee. Flowers were arriving by the day into the hearing, bouquets of flowers for Joanne Hayes from friends and supporters all over the country. And a lot of people today would say that it was a significant element in the whole liberalisation of women and, you know, women's rights and changes in social legislation that occurred in the years and decades that followed, that this was really a watershed in some respects.
Yeah, because we had this scenario whereby an all-male, Judge Kevin Lynch, obviously a male, all the barristers and solicitors were all men. Joanna was giving evidence for 5 days. I think it was about 80 days in total, the evidence.
Yes, 82 days altogether. We were told first to take about 2 to 3 weeks and it would be all over by the end of January. It ended in June in Dublin Castle.
And you had this scenario whereby she was the focus, and as you say, her private life, how she came to be having a relationship. She was a single person, but Jeremiah Locke, with whom she was having a relationship, was married. And it wasn't a question of Jeremiah Locke's circumstances, and that's his own business, but they were sort of portraying Joanna, presumably on the basis that they saw it beneficial to their clients, as some kind of a fallen woman or somebody who goes out looking to snatch married men. And it was appalling stuff.
Yes, it was. And they tried to discredit her as much as they could. And there were some horrendous days during that hearing in Tralee. She was really, really given a very, very rough time. And I remember one particular day when she was under severe cross-examination from Martin Kennedy, who was a senior counsel acting for the senior Gardaí in the case. And she became visibly upset when he suggested to her that she never had any intention of allowing her baby to live. And he pressed her and pressed her. And of course, she said, no, 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 that was never her intention. And eventually she pleaded with the judge, can I go out? Can I leave the room? And she was obviously feeling sick. So the judge allowed her to leave the hearing. She rushed out the door, down a corridor and into a toilet where she got physically sick, I believe. And it was the tribunal was resumed possibly half an hour later. And the same line of questioning continued. So there was no mercy shown her, really.
And I think you mentioned before, Donald, during breaks and all, you'd often meet her and her sister Kathleen outside.
Yes, I got to know them quite well. And I found them to be, firstly, very gentle people. And I said to myself, no way, they're not killers. And I got to know her brothers as well, Ned and Mike. And we friendly chats, usually about the GAA and things like that, hurling, or they're from the hurling belt in North Kerry. And we talk about anything except the tribunal, which they wouldn't discuss that with you really. But so that was the impression I got. And what really hit me was when I thought about the statements that they made, and I said, these people were no match for the Garda Murder Squad, who were seasoned detectives, used to dealing with tough, hardened criminals. The Hayeses were honest to God, quiet country people. And they were easy meat for some of these people because they were, I would imagine, quite easily frightened or intimidated. And to me, even though Judge Lynch failed to answer the key issues, how come they came to make these statements? They claimed always they were made under duress and that they were forced out of them. The Hayeses maintained that. And in those days, interviews in Garda stations were not videoed or recorded. There was no solicitor present. So you're faced with conflicting stories. The guards say, oh, no, no, we didn't force any statements out of the Hayeses. The Hayeses saying quite the opposite.
To know what's really happening, subscribe to the Irish Examiner today at irishexaminer.com/subscribe.
And as you say, I went on for about 83 days. And then the Judge Kevin Lynch, who went away. And actually, I think there's a small... there's a kind of historical element to that, a complete by-the-by, but it goes back to the Civil War. I think Judge Kevin Lynch was related to a very prominent pro-treaty individual, Lynch. I forget his first
Fionnán
name.
Fionnán Lynch,
yeah. That's right. And the Hayeses, I think, were related
I think he was from South Kerry as well, by the way.
He was. He was originally. And the Hayeses were related to, was it Stephen Fuller?
Stephen Fuller. Their mother was Fuller, yeah.
Who was one of the men who was the only survivor in
Ballyseedy, the Civil War.
Ballyseedy during the Civil War. That was just a by-the-by. But in any event, Judge Kevin Lynch, he drew up his report. He didn't find anything about duress. He said that the Hayeses had perjured themselves. He accused them of lying. And all he said about the Gardaí was to the effect that some may have gilded the lily. So there was absolutely no findings against the Gardaí. The only people against whom there were findings in all of this were the Hayes family.
Yes, that's true. Now, he was mildly critical of the guards for not going out to properly search the farm after being told by Joanne Hayes that the baby's body was out on the land. Now, he was mildly critical of them for that. One thing which he did do, which was probably very significant from Joanne Hayes's point of view, is that he said she was not the mother of the Cara Sabine baby. So that was one positive from the Hayes's point of view, that he made that crystal clear. Now, that didn't take a great deal of calculating to come up with that finding, because the twins' theory was totally absurd.
It was absurd, and I think some of the Gardaí maintained it for years afterwards, and this theory of superfecundation came up, which involves somebody giving birth to twins and the individual baby has different father.
That was treated with total derision by most people at the time, and it had no scientific support whatsoever.
None whatsoever, but some of the Gardaí maintained it for a very long time afterwards.
To this day, I believe some of the Gardaí, at least one, maintains it very strongly, in spite of everything, almost 40 years on, you know.
There was outrage I think it's fair to say, at the report as well. And I recall, because I looked at it many years later, in particular, highly unusual, certainly in terms of judicial inquiries. Gene Kerrigan in McGill magazine wrote a very long article saying where the judge got it wrong. And the very unusual aspect was the judge came out and actually replied to him in the magazine, which, but I think even at that, I think people still felt that the Hayes, even back then, were done a severe disservice.
What was very significant, Mick, at the time was the support the Hayeses received from their own community.
Yeah.
And I remember meeting people from Abbey Dorney in at protest, actually, at the hearing, outside the hearing, on the street outside. And they spoke so highly of the Hayes family. They were highly respected people. And when you see old people, young people, men, women, all coming out, a community united behind a family and vouching for them in the highest possible way, you know, you say, as I mentioned earlier, these people are not murderers. And these people, they had, what really got people going was the way Joanne Hayes was being treated and the way her private life was being torn apart in public glare.
Absolutely. And as you say, they were able to eventually get on with their lives and remained highly regarded in their own community, which, of course, is the primary thing. On the wider front, the issue was sort of put to bed. Well, there was nowhere else it could go on the basis of the outcome of the tribunal. Then we fast forward to 2018. It's resurrected. The Gardaí make an apology to Joanna Hayes for what she had been put through. And then eventually there's a reference to the High Court. There's an action in the High Court. And the High Court judge rules that the findings against her and her family in the tribunal were wrong, were unfounded and unwarranted. And as I say, belatedly, very belatedly, there was a settlement. And that's where that end of things went. And back again to where we started. And that was that, as you said, Donal, 2 weeks after the discovery of baby John, the initial investigation was, to the greatest extent, shut down because the Gardaí were under the impression their answers all lay 70 kilometres up in North Kerry in Abbey Dorney, and with Joanna Hayes.
They thought it was too much of a coincidence that almost exactly the same time that the babies washed into Carstavine, a woman in North Kerry has a baby, and yet where is the baby? We can't see the baby. What happened to the baby in North Kerry? Now, she kept telling them, as I said, the baby is out on the farm, out on the land, go. I'll tell you where it is, but they didn't act on her advice, or whatever you want to call it. So, and then the guards were forced into ridiculous theories like the twins theory, super fecundation, and all these things. And it became ever more ridiculous. And you denial and counterclaim and the whole lot. And the whole thing ended up being a bit of a farce, to be honest.
Yeah, and I suppose you could speculate that under different circumstances, okay, as you say initially, they thought it was too much of a coincidence, and you can certainly take that at face value. But I think the crucial aspect was that once they confronted, if you want to use that phrase, Joanna Hayes with what they felt was a suspicious case against her, and once she explained to them what her circumstances were, at that point, things should have been resolved. And they should have been then in a position to return to South Kerry and continue to try and find out who the real culprit was for the death of baby John.
You know, actually, I was very closely involved in the whole coverage, as you know. But one thing which has struck me a lot since is that, and I knew a lot of the local guards who were involved, and there was a certain amount of resentment of the murder squad for coming in. Now, at the time, that was a practice. If there was a murder anywhere in the country, the murder squad was called in. And the tactics that they used were very controversial, subsequently in particular. And the local guards I've got it from several local guards whom I know well, that if it had been left to us, this monumental mess might never have been created. That they might have handled the whole thing very differently. The local guards would have you believe now. I don't know whether that's true, but there was a strong theory among several Gardaí that I knew that they would have handled it better themselves at a local level. They knew the people. These guards, even though a few of them were from Kerry,
that's the point. They were very eager to get into it because some of them were native, but as you say, culturally, they had been removed for a long time. They'd been operating out of Dublin and they had been dealing for the greatest part with the likes of subversives and hard jaws and real murderers, effectively.
Yes, yeah. And the head of the murder squad was a man called Detective Superintendent John Courtney, who came from Annascaul in West Kerry. And but I don't think some of the fellas in the murder squad, and they were all men, by the way, didn't seem to understand the psyche of rural people. And I'm feeling that the local guards certainly, I think, wouldn't have persisted with stupid theories about twins and super fecundation and all that. And they would have a lot better, they'd have more local insights and more local contacts. And what really opened my eyes at a personal level was the support of the people of North Kerry and Abbey Dorney, especially for the Hayes family. And the incredulity of the people up there after they had been charged really would amaze you.
Yeah, it's a very good point, Donal. I mean, as you say, it could have been crucial at the point when Joanna was first questioned about this. And if she explained that you could well imagine a local guard might have said, all right, I know the family are saying that, we'll go out and have a look and see if it stacks up. And they would have gone out and found that her story was entirely correct.
Correct. And that would have changed the whole line of the investigation. And it would have helped them to refocus again in South Kerry, where they believed the real suspect was. And now, another point, Mick, is there were all kinds of theories at the time about the baby, its origins. The presumption was that the baby came from the immediate Carsevine area, maybe Valencia, maybe, you know, the environs of Carsevine, let us say. Now, there was a theory as well that the baby may have been thrown overboard from a ship at sea or a boat, or it could have been washed in from any place. We don't know. There were too many assumptions in this whole saga, wrong assumptions. And is it a wrong assumption as well that the baby actually originated in South Kerry? We don't know.
It's a fair point, Donald. Absolutely. Knowing the geography, and there is an awful lot of inlets and what have you there, and White Strand is sort of hidden inside, comes right in the harbour. For that reason, it appears that when eventually in 2018, and this I find this a bit shocking. As we say, after 2 weeks it's shut down, and because of everything that flowed, including this controversial tribunal, the guards being in the spotlight and everything, because of all that, and because some of the Gardaí appear to persist with the belief that Joanna Hayes had something to do with it, it was never resumed. And so then in 2018, when it is resumed, one of the areas of focus that the Cold Case Review looked at was Valentia Island, which people will well know, it's populated, it's usually populated during the summer, but it has an all-round population there, that the tides would make it very plausible that perhaps it had gone into the water in Valentia Island and had been washed up in the White Strand. And in Valentia and the general Carsevine area, they've taken a large number of DNA samples.
Yeah. I mean, that was quite a controversial investigation at the time, because people were saying it was too intrusive, and they were investigating people who, say, were having extramarital affairs, or women who've had babies out of wedlock, even cases of incest and all that, that it was quite an intrusive sort of an investigation that really got into people's privacy, very private matters. And still it didn't throw up anything. But as I said, it only lasted a few weeks around Carsevine, and it shifted to North Kerry then. And the trail seemed to have gone cold after that, if there was a local trail.
Yeah, and that seems to be the current focus. And it would seem that the exhumation was done with a view to getting fresh DNA samples and seeing is there some kind of a match. Because, for example, if there was a family match and, say, for example, a mother or a woman may have immigrated 10, 20, 30, 35 years ago, they could have a match, or even someone still living locally. But as you say, it still remains something of an assumption that the mother, there's an assumption also that the mother was directly responsible for stabbing the baby. That may be more soundly based than the base. It certainly seems like a frenzied attack.
Yes, it does. I mean, 28 stab wounds and a broken neck in an infant, like, you know, very young. It sounds like a terribly crazed attack, and it shouldn't be assumed it was the mother did it necessarily. You don't know, it could be another family member. Or what amazes me about it is why I'm not, never really was totally convinced the origin of the baby was local, is that it's a pretty tight community around Carseveen and South, around Valencia and Oslo, but I know of it, and I know a lot of people there. That much doesn't happen without everyone knowing about it. And that suspicions might have been aroused, or people have a lot to do with one another, you know, and a lot of neighbourliness, and people know each other's business quite well. And that if there was anything like that, I'd expect the guards to get wind of it pretty quickly. And when the investigation was reopened a couple of years ago, you figured that some new information or new suspects have come to light. But nothing has happened since. The exhumation may indicate that they have a suspect and they want more DNA. That, to me, would seem to be the thinking. But we're still as far away as we ever were, I think, from cracking this case.
I think you're right. And as you say, it is a tight-knit community. And the idea that in the first instance something like this could happen without anybody knowing, and thereafter, once the body was found, that even at that stage, that nobody would have got wind of it. It on one level, it certainly seems unlikely. The other thing, Donal, that arises, and people will be aware that recently RT television showed a documentary that looked back at the killing of Father Niall Molloy in 1985. And there are some parallels there in terms of the, I suppose what you might say, how justice was not done for people in a scenario whereby there was far too much deference for authority and judicial authority even. And it certainly was a cold place for anybody who found themselves outside the normal strictures that were in place at the time.
Yeah, well, you see, the guards at the time were virtually unquestioned in their modus operandi. It's different now because we've had a lot of scandals and investigations and inquiries involving Gardaí since then. We know that the power of the church has hugely diminished. Illegitimacy has been abolished, I think, since 1987. Cohabitation has become commonplace. Pregnancy outside marriage no longer has that kind of a stigma. Things have changed. When you remember back in that time in the 80s, homosexuality and divorce, for instance, were still illegal. Same-sex marriage and abortion were 3 or 4 decades away all the time. So, I mean, society has changed hugely, and you really have to, I think, to have lived through that kind of a society, which I grew up in anyway, to try and understand the deference and the reverence indeed, and the over reverence and over deference for institutions that have been very much discredited in Irish society since then.
Yeah, I suppose as Bob Dylan put it, 'twas in another lifetime, it was, of toil and blood.
It was, and that's why I'm saying that what was properly an investigation into the Garda's handling of a serious crime in South Kerry turned into an inquisition into a 25-year-old woman's private life.
It is quite amazing, actually, when you put it in those terms, and that is so accurate. It is indeed. Donal Hickey, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
I'd also like to thank our engineer, JJ Vernon. Thank you, folks, for listening. You can get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you soon.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.